22-23 Luncheon Series with Travis Hessman, an 18-year veteran on tech innovations and manufacturing. Join the coalition Thursday, October 27th, to hear his perspective on the new tools and technology poised to spur a new rise in U.S. manufacturing. Doors open at 11:30. The event is free and open to the public. RSVP at carthage.edu/businesscoalition. This is WGTD-HD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Guida Brown, former executive director of the Hope Council, Dr. Steve Brown, retired professor of educational leadership and school law, Dr. Karen Sconsert, chair of the education department and associate professor at Carthage College, Dr. Jonathan Shaler, professor of communications at UW Parkside, and Stephanie Skilba, Vice President for Community and Government Relations at Gateway Technical College. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. It's springtime of an election year, and the Wisconsin State Legislature is busy with many pieces of legislation, including several about K through 12 schools. One proposed piece of legislation reads as follows. Under current law, school districts, independent charter schools, and private schools participating in the parental school choice programs must administer a standardized reading test to certain third grade pupils. Under the bill, a school board, independent charter school operator, or private school participating in the parental school choice building may not promote a third grade pupil enrolled in the school district, including a pupil enrolled in a charter school in the school district, to the fourth grade unless that pupil scores proficient or higher on the test. So the shorthand for this is that it's a flunking policy. And at first hearing, it might sound like a great policy. We don't want kids moving on to fourth grade without being able to read proficiently. So as with many sweeping policies, though, it's really not that simple. And we have a very large scale study of retaining students that was completed nearly 20 years ago in Illinois during a time where there was a similar policy in place. So does it make sense to flunk kids who struggle on a standardized test when they are 8 or 9 years old? What are the benefits to such a policy for kids, schools, and taxpayers? And are there any drawbacks? So for today's guest to discuss this issue is Jenny Nagaoka, who is the deputy director of the UChicago Consortium, where she has conducted research for over 20 years. Her research interests focus on policy and practice in urban education reform, particularly using data to connect research and practice. She is the lead researcher on the To and Through Project, a project that provides educators, policymakers, and families with research data and training on the milestones that matter the most for college success. She is also the lead author of Foundations for Young Adult Success, a developmental framework, which draws on research and practice evidence to build a coherent framework of foundational factors for young adult success. And so I'm really happy to welcome Jenny Nagaoka. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. It's good to talk to you, Karen.
Yes. So full disclosure, I worked at the UChicago Consortium from 1994 to 2001, and Jenny and I were colleagues briefly for a few of those years. I also interviewed Jenny's colleague, Elaine Allensworth, about a study of the long-term effects of ACT scores and whether they are predictive of college completion. That ACT score interview, like this one, is available to listen to again at WGTD.org on the Education Matters archive page. So welcome again, Jenny. First, please tell us about the policy that Chicago adopted for public school students. When was it put into place and what was the policy?
Sure. So Chicago is one of the first districts or states to really be pushing a retention policy, and they called it ending social promotion. So this is a policy from 25 years ago. So it first went into place fully in 1997. Initially in 1996, they enacted for eighth graders, but the full policy didn't happen until 1 year later. So there are three what we refer to as the gate grades under this policy. So it impacts third graders, sixth graders, and eighth graders. And at the time in 1997, students in those three grades would take the Iowa Test of Basic Skills in spring. If they didn't pass cutoff scores, they would have to attend a summer program called Summer Bridge. They'd have another opportunity to take the test and achieve scores, pass the cutoff scores. And if they didn't pass those, they would have to repeat the grade. For eighth graders who were considerably older than their peers, and they also were not in regular high schools. There was some discretion given to principals around who would be promoted, but largely this was initially a policy that was centered around test scores. And a few years later, they did start to also use other types of criteria like attendance, grades, homework completion, as other sorts of factors that were used at the end of summer before a student would actually be retained. And currently the policy in the Chicago Public Schools is entirely based on grades and then some other types of discrepancies.
This kind of a longstanding issue is whether test scores are very predictive of much of anything. And so and the argument is that grades are much more predictive in the same way. I think the analogy that Elaine used when we talked about this a few months ago was that if you were trying to choose football players for your team and you were only using their time on the 100 meter dash and not all the other things that they do in practice, on multiple days over multiple times, you would probably not have a particularly good football team because the 100 meter dash is only one thing that would tell you anything about their skills as a football player. It's not telling you about a lot of the other things that go into being a good football player. So that's sort of one way to look at it. So tell us, what was the rationale at the time, 25 years ago, for this policy in Chicago? What was the problem that policymakers thought that they would solve by holding kids back a grade at third, sixth, and eighth grade?
Yeah, so 25 years ago, the Chicago Public Schools were in a really different place. I mean, there were a lot of concerns about how schools were doing, achievement levels overall. High school graduation rates were below 50%. They're now over 80%, so things have changed considerably. But one of the big things that was coming up is that high school teachers and principals were saying that students were coming to them not prepared to do high school level work. So there was this idea that something had to be done to really improve student achievement. And so part of the thought process is that, let's figure out who the students are that are struggling. And there's this idea that students would be better off if they had another opportunity to see the material, do all these skills, and they would be able to catch up by repeating a grade. And that after repeating the grade, they would then sort of be much better off and be better performing going forward. And so a lot of the idea around retention was this whole idea of a kind of this hard accountability that, what we really need to do is motivate students and teachers to work harder, to get parents more involved, part of the issue is that students don't care about school, student or teachers are not sufficiently motivated to be doing their jobs well and to really be trying to support their students in learning and on how to do that. I think there are some good things. It's important to be paying attention to the students who are struggling the most. And this is part of the idea is that, a lot of time, I think, especially 25 years ago, schools were largely designed for kind of average achieving students. There were some opportunities for high achieving students, but there really wasn't that much attention being paid to the students who were struggling. And this then did shift attention to these students who actually did need for students, right? For third graders, for sixth graders, and for eighth graders. I think that's like students were not measuring up based on a couple of attempts at a test. And because they were not doing well enough, they were going to have to repeat a grade. You know, and I think the question that came up then, and I imagine now in Wisconsin, is also around who actually isn't doing the job that they're supposed to be doing for students. You know, like, how are schools performing? Are schools actually being given the kind of resources they actually need to support students well? This idea that this is strictly a problem of motivation, that everybody inside of schools, students included, just need to work harder, is a rather limited way of thinking about what actually needs to be happening and what needs to change inside of schools.
Right. Yeah, I think that, you know, this seems like an age-old issue. Like, there are some people, I was mentioning to you just before we started recording that, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, everyone was like, oh, wow, okay, now I sort of see what teachers go through every day because I'm watching it on my kid's screen while we're all here at home. But that quickly shifted. Somehow it became an issue of teachers aren't really working if they're not in their classrooms, even though most of them wanted nothing more than to be in their classrooms. So it's sort of an interesting blame game to play. When the questions are probably a lot bigger than that we pulled from the bill. And how is it similar?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably one thing to note too is that, you know, like, the policy in Chicago did evolve over time, even in the time period. So there's a lot of tweaks going on. You know, I mean, in Chicago, there were three gate grades. It's third, sixth, and eighth grade. Wisconsin is focused on third grade. So one of the big downsides of what happened in Chicago is that some students ended up being retainers in third grade, which is a lot of time. I think one of the really important differences with how the policy was done in Chicago is that students with disabilities and English language learners allowed in Chicago, like, initially it was sort of kind of very ambiguous about what that meant, but there was discretion at who would be passed. Later on, the criteria became a little bit clearer about, like, when students, like, when other criteria like grades, attendance, homework performance would actually be subject to it. I think another thing that Chicago actually really got right was implementing support programs. So I mentioned the Summer Bridge program that Chicago had. So it's like the idea is that, you know, things didn't work out for students during the school year, but they would also provide another opportunity for students to be exposed to the material that they apparently struggled with the first time around. And then, very importantly, be given a second opportunity to take the test and then pass. So there was the idea that the school year was not enough, but given something that is more targeted toward the needs of students who hadn't been able to pass the test cutoff scores, they might learn the material better another time, and that they also had another opportunity to pass the test. Chicago, a little bit later, also started with an after-school program that they called Lighthouse. And so students that either seemed to be it seemed like they, given their previous performance, that they may not be likely to actually pass the cutoff scores on the test, were participating, and also students were retained in it. I think the Chicago policy and what is being proposed in Wisconsin is how little guidance there is being given on kind of the retained year, like what's supposed to be different the second time around. There's a lot of specific reasons why students may not have done it, but, you know, I think actually trying to understand what may need to be different or what additional supports could actually help students if they are retained is like a critical missing piece in both what Chicago did.
It's testing policy to make students repeat a year of schooling with researcher Jenny Nagaoka of the University of Chicago Consortium is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. I do want to say that I pulled out the one part that's about third grade test scores. There are a few other things in the bill, one of which is to increase the number of teachers that have special reading licenses and are reading specialists. And there's some other things. So it's a little hard to say from the first published bill to the final passed bill what will end up being in this. But this was the part that sort of grabbed me because I remember doing the research on this. I was when Jenny was doing this research, this report we're talking about was published 17 years ago. I believe it was the follow-up to the policy. And before that, a few years earlier, I was participating, for example, doing a lot of reading in their classes. And I remember an eighth grade teacher telling me very specifically about how, and this was a teacher who was great and always had done well and was a sort of beloved figure in her school.
Views with students mm-hmm. and teachers about their experiences. So we really kind of got a pretty good sense, not just in terms of test scores, what was happening to students, but really what was it like to be in this policy under retention and the Summer Bridge experience as well. You know, and this was particular, I think one of the things important to like when I go back like 25, like what things were like 20, 25 years ago. I mean, this is a really a big deal in Chicago. It was kind of, especially in lower achieving schools, this was like all consuming. This was really you know, from both the teacher and the student perspective, this was something that occupied a great deal of their minds and what they were trying to do during school. And so, you know, when we looked at survey results and how teachers were describing what they're doing, I mean, a lot of it is like exactly what you were saying, Karen, about how there was like this teachers changed what they were teaching to be trying to support students in learning what was needed for the test, not what they thought students actually should be learning in third, sixth, and eighth grade, but what they thought they needed to know in order to pass the test. And the Iowa Test of Basic Skills, which was used for the policy, was a pretty narrow test. It wasn't designed around a curriculum. There's also a lot more time being spent on math and reading. Science, art, music, PE were deprioritized during the school day. And then even within those topics, teachers started to focus on what was covered by the test, how they taught was much more oriented toward tests. They also spent a lot of time on test prep in the sense of test-taking skills. So, you know, how do you we'd heard from teachers who were having students practice bubbling in the form so that they would actually cover the whole area and it would get read by the Scantron machine, you know, just understanding guessing strategies, like things that were actually not instructional content, but just how to game the test or how to just do better on the test. You know, and other work actually that was done by Elaine showed that like on the ACT scores, the more time that students are spending on test prep, it's actually detrimental to how they perform on tests. So not only is because they're not actually learning what is supposed to be covered by the test. So this is something that was also really concerning. You know, I mean, I think, you know, on the other hand, you know, they're like one of the pieces of the policy was around motivation. And, you know, in interviews that we did with sixth and eighth graders, you know, there were a lot of students who actually did say they started working harder mm-hmm. and they also felt more supported by teachers, you know, but on the other hand, there were also students who were sort of demotivated by this because they felt like they had no chance to pass the test. It's like, it was this this test score barrier looming in front of them that they really didn't have any sense of how they would be able to pass it. But another thing that came up in the qualitative work was just how important the role of teachers really was in how students thought about the test. Like, was this something that really helped the teachers actually create an environment where students felt supported and that they were sort of working together to help students pass the test? Because I think one thing too that I think is really important to remember about a policy like this is that it's not just going to be affecting the students who end up being retained, especially in the low achieving schools. This is something that's affecting all of the students and is affecting how teachers are approaching their instruction. So this may seem like a relatively narrow policy that's about super low achieving students, but actually if it also affects the other students who are in those schools and in those classrooms. Mm-hmm. So the implications are a lot broader than I think it may be immediately apparent with this.
It's interesting that the sixth and the eighth graders in some cases were either more motivated or possibly more discouraged. Mm-hmm. Sixth and eighth graders are at a really different stage in their lives and in their sort of feelings of their own agency than I think third graders are. And it's sort of a paradox though, because by sixth or eighth grade, you know, some of the skill windows are maybe a closed or possibly so narrow that it's hard to catch up. So you sort of do want to go to third grade or earlier to identify students, but they are not really so much in control of their own motivation at that point. Some of them can be motivated, but they don't really understand. Just telling them you can't watch TV or you can't play with your iPad unless you do well on this thing is, you know, not necessarily going to work, because that's it's not just because they're not working, especially if they have some sort of a learning disability around reading or something like that that's not diagnosed. So tell us sort of overall, what were the findings about the policy? Were a lot of students held back? What happened to the ones who were? What happened to the ones who passed and moved on? Did anybody get, you know, retained multiple times, you mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, this is a big policy in Chicago, and it affected, I mean, almost all students were affected in different ways. But, you know, a lot of students were retained in Chicago. So among third graders who were eligible for the policy, so students who were not English learners or students with disabilities, 20% of third graders were retained, and about 10% of sixth graders and eighth graders were retained in the first 3 years of the policy. These numbers did go down in later years, but initially there were a lot of students who were being retained, and in particular, Black students were more likely to be retained. I think the numbers for Latino students were somewhat lower, but a lot more Latino students didn't fall under the policy because they were classified as English learners at the time of the tests. Mm-hmm. Overall, we did see on the plus side across the board, test scores, more and more students were actually passing the cutoff scores on the Iowa tests, and test scores did go up. So there was some changes in what was happening on the test scores. But I think the big question that I think people have to kind of the counterfactual of what their performance would have looked like had they not been retained. And we took that approach and we said, would students be better off? Like, would a student who struggled in third, sixth, or eighth grade be better off being retained or being promoted to the next grade? And what happened to their learning gains under those two scenarios? What we found is that, for third graders, there really wasn't and each year of schooling.
Right. Yeah. So I just want to stop and make this point right now, since you're saying it. If you are holding a student back and having them repeat a grade, another grade, that means you're attacking an extra year at whatever the cost of that year is onto the end of their schooling. It's not like they repeat third grade and then they skip fourth grade. They just keep going through. So if they're in school from K through 12, that's 13 years.
Are also large too, right? Because mm-hmm. you're spending another year in school. So even if you kind of go through high school and go on to college and sort of graduate in a timely fashion, it's like one less year that you are a part of the workforce potentially, right, or doing whatever it is that you would like to be doing with your life, because you're spending most of your time in school. And so there's a lot of, you know, life trajectory implications for this, for these students. And there's also, you know, even if everything goes completely well after that retained year, there's a lot of lifelong differences, but there's also the expenses to school districts, to, you know, for sixth graders, we actually saw that they had lower learning gains during the retained years. So there's actually some negative effects for these students. So not only do they have this extra year of schooling, but they're actually learning less in their retained year than what we would estimate these students would have learned had they been promoted. And I think the other thing to think about too is we didn't look at this for third and sixth graders, but for eighth graders who had been retained, they also were a little bit more likely to be dropping out of high school. So that's another way that this creates, you know, both, you know, some consequences for the individual students and their families, but it also means that as a whole, we have fewer graduates. There are some other mitigating factors on this, like in Chicago, it also seemed that overall, you know, we saw slightly high overall test scores. We also saw from mm-hmm. this, at least strictly in terms of graduation and test scores. I think one other, there are a couple of other kind of probably somewhat less intended consequences of this policy. And this has happened maybe perhaps more likely to happen in Chicago than in Wisconsin because of how we handled students with disabilities. But there were a lot more students who ended up being classified as having disabilities. So about 20% of students who were retained in third grade and sixth graders were identified as having a disability. Now, it's possible that this was, that these were undiagnosed students, and this was, you know, and that it was good that they were finally identified. But this was something that happened later on than it should have been. And so that was, I think, one thing that happened. Another is also saw more students being retained prior to third grade. So because teachers in kindergarten, first and second grade knew that this third grade test score, you know, the possibility of being retained was coming up, they actually started retaining more students in the earlier grade. So it's not just something that happens in third grade. This is also impacting how teachers in earlier grades are thinking about their students. And so I think just to kind of reiterate, this is a policy that's not just like, it's not going to affect just third grade. This has like spillover effects mm-hmm. over time for a lot of other teachers and across schools too.
Let me quickly do a reintroduction. You are listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of the use of standardized testing policy to have students repeat a year of schooling with researcher Jenny Nagaoka of the UChicago Consortium is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. You've already raised a whole bunch of things that even I, who was there at the time and have read the reports, kind of forgot about, that the fact that people were retaining kids in kindergarten and first grade. Does that make any sense? Like, should that be where our focus is, on those early grades? And does retention at early grades help, or effective way of intervening if students are having difficulty learning to read?
I mean, I think, you know, that's kind of an interesting question, because I think, you know, in some ways, like, we have certain milestones, you know, besides test scores that we think students should be hitting, and some students may end up being retained. But I think, you know, one thing that we know about development is that it's not as evenly paced as we think it should be. Students develop at different rates. They learn at different rates. This isn't something that's just this clear linear trajectory that is going to go, you know, a spurt and suddenly they are at a much more similar place to their classmates. And so I think it's, you know, there may be specific circumstances where it makes sense, but a lot of times, you know, time will allow things to even out. And, you know, what's more important is not to sort of say just repeating a grade again will make a difference, but, you know, to be really thinking about what it is that individual students really need in order to be learning and developing and be successful in school. You know, I think this one other thing about the retention policy is that, you know, it's based on one test score and one sort of idea of what students need to be, like what students need to have learned and what they need to be able to do. And test scores are really narrow. And it's just really important to make sure that students are being seen more holistically and thinking about what they need in order to be successful in school.
Yeah. I mean, it's the 100 meter dash kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right. Completely. So it's like, really, is that enough? If you can run really fast, does that make you a great football player? There's actually a whole lot of other skills involved. And does doing well on one test score on one day make you a really good member of society, which is partly what we're trying to do in schools, not just teach academics, but just to be able to get along with other people and, you know, behave on the playground and be healthy and all kinds of other things. So,
yeah, I mean, because that is like one of the things too that happened. I mean, you sort of talked a little bit about how teachers narrowed what they were teaching, but it also just meant like the purpose of school for students and teachers narrowed in a lot of ways, right? I mean, it's sort of this one measure became the determinant of whether or not a student thought they were successful or a failure. And it really started to define what, like, why school mattered and what the purpose of schooling was simply about tests. And we know that really what brings that, what, why students want to learn, why students want to teach, what we actually care about, what young people become in the long term, is a lot more than a single test score. I mean, I don't think any of us as adults define ourselves by our SAT scores, or at least I hope not, because there's so much more to life and so much more of what defines what we get out of life, what we're contributing to society, than a test score. And we want schools to be developing students in those directions and not be narrowed down to something that is as small as a test score. Like, test scores provide information and they have their place, but they should not be the only way that we define whether or not a student is going to be successful in the long term or what the purpose of schooling actually is.
One researcher put it in a way that I repeat all the time to my students who are future teachers, that our current model of schooling is based on batch problems. And so to expect everyone that was born in a certain 12-month period to develop in exactly the same way, we know that there are big differences between the kids that are born in September and the ones that are born in June, because that's a big period of time when you're a little kid. So it's sort of an interesting thing that we continue to use that as our benchmark, is when you were born, as opposed to where you are in developmental track. So if you had a member of the Wisconsin legislature here today talking with us, maybe they would just zoom in with us for a few minutes. What advice would you give them on this policy, and what alternatives would you recommend to holding students back in third grade based on test scores?
I mean, you know, one is like, you know, we didn't find any evidence that retaining students helped them at all. There were, you know, some negative effects for particularly for students who retained in later grades, but I think the idea that like a third grade student is going through third grade twice is going to help them, there's no evidence for that. And they are spending one extra year of their life, and we're paying for one extra year of schooling. So that doesn't seem to be a terribly effective strategy. You know, there may be some motivational benefits for some teachers and some students and some families, but that is not, I think it's a misidentification of the fundamental issue that we're trying to address, you know, helping students do better in school and helping teachers be more effective. You know, what's really going to matter is the kind of investments that we're making in schools. Are we helping teachers be able to, you know, to have the kinds of have training, to have the kind of time and resources that they really are able to be effective in helping students learn and develop in schools? I think maybe one thing that Chicago did do well was actually the idea that, you know, some students do need extra supports. You know, and I didn't talk that much about the Summer Bridge program, but that was, I think, largely viewed as successful by students and teachers. I think one of the things that surprised me most about the study was the fact that the sixth and eighth grade students, for the most part, actually liked the experience of summer school and liked it better than their regular school. They found it more engaging. It was a lot more targeted for them. And teachers actually had the time to go at the pace and to sort of understand what students actually needed in order to be successful. So I think that sort of points to, there were some good things about summer school in Chicago, but what can we learn from that, especially when you think about a policy where the consequences of not doing well are really falling on 8 and 9 year olds. I mean, I think that's really hard to think about, mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, when the adults are not providing students the kind of learning environment and supports that they need in order to do well, we're placing all the consequences on children, as opposed to really thinking about, you know, how can we do a better job of serving students?
Great. So we're out of time, as often happens. How can listeners access this 2004 report or any of your current research?
Yeah, so all of our research is available on our website, which is consortium, consortium.uchicago.edu. So it's consortium.uchicago.edu. And they're all available free PDFs.
I'll put that in the show notes and also on the Facebook page if anybody wants to access this specific report or the research that's done in general. Well, thank you, Jenny. You're listening to WGTD HDFM. This is Education Matters, and this discussion of the use of standardized testing policy to have students repeat a year of schooling with researcher Jenny Nagaoka of the UChicago Consortium is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You're invited to listen again.
Good morning. I'm Steve Brown, executive producer. We are broadcasting live today from the Civil War Museum located in downtown Kenosha, Wisconsin.